Now to today's attacks in Jakarta, Indonesia, claimed by the Islamic State group in the world's most populous Muslim-majority nation. Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Margaret Warner begins our coverage, and a warning, some of the images may be disturbing.
It's a moment of cold-blooded calculation as gunfire cracks, two suicide bombers crouch, make ready, and then... In all, five attackers and two civilians died when multiple gunmen and suicide bombers struck the center of Jakarta this morning.
At first, I thought it was the explosion of a car tire, but then I realized it was a bomb explosion. Then I saw the motorcyclers all wearing black clothes, and they pulled out long guns.
The attackers hit a police booth at a busy intersection with guns and grenades. Another target was a nearby Starbucks. Police say one bomber blew himself up inside, and waiting gunmen tried to shoot the survivors as they fled. After hours of gunfire, investigators found more undetonated bombs in a neighboring building. They took four militants into custody. The Islamic State group quickly claimed responsibility. Its statement read, "A group of soldiers of the Caliphate in Indonesia targeted a gathering from the Crusader Alliance that fights the Islamic State in Jakarta." Jakarta's police chief offered a slightly different account. He pointed to an extremist group based in Southeast Asia with ties to ISIS.
There's a militant named Barun Naim who wants to be the leader of the region. All leaders of ISIS in Southeast Asia are competing to be the chief. That's why he plotted this attack.
Naim himself is believed to be in the Islamic State's de facto capital, Raqqa, Syria, according to police. But they warn today that his group has also expanded its efforts across Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Thailand. Just last month, police arrested more than a dozen people on the Indonesian island of Java on charges of planning attacks on Christmas and New Year's Eve. They said some received funding from Naim. Still, there were questions today about the level of sophistication in the Jakarta attacks.
According to terrorism analysts who I spoke to today, they did not think much of the actual tactics of this group or the attackers who were involved today, based on the fact they didn't really kill anybody.
Joe Cochran is the Indonesia correspondent for the International New York Times, based in Jakarta. He spoke via Skype.
A number of these people's colleagues had been arrested over the last 3 or 4 weeks in various parts of Indonesia. So the feeling was these guys were about to be picked up, and they were just trying some sort of last gasp effort at glory or revenge against the police.
The largest Muslim country in the world, Indonesia has long been a target of violent Islamist extremism. The most notorious incident came in 2002 when the Al-Qaeda-linked Jamaat Islamiyah attacked nightclubs on the island of Bali, killing 202 people. And in 2009, the same group struck two hotels in Jakarta, leaving 8 dead. Since then, the government has led a massive effort to dismantle Jamaat Islamiyah, but there are concerns of a resurgence. Meanwhile, Jakarta and its 10 million people are now on high alert as the investigation begins. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Margaret Warner.
And for more on how ISIS inspires and influences militant Islamist groups around the world, I'm joined by Joby Warrick. He's a national security reporter at the Washington Post, and he's author of the book Black Flags, The Rise of ISIS. Joby Warrick, welcome back
to
the program. Help us first, though, understand who is this group that's claiming responsibility. It sounds like there are different groups operating around that part of Asia.
Yeah, but there are a number of these Southeast Asians in ISIS proper and working out of Syria. There's a battalion there that's called Katiba, and they've actually been successful in attacking Kurdish targets. They've gone on internet claiming credit, claiming that they're strong and trying to drive other recruits to them. And so you see this, once again, this is obviously like the model we've seen in other places, Belgians and French and Germans. And others kind of calling out in a nationalistic way to the people to come from the region to help and, you know, join the ISIS cause.
So what is there firm connection between Jakarta and what's going on in Syria and Iraq?
I think there is, in a sense, that there's this common effort by ISIS to try to create these cells all over the world. We've seen it in all kinds of places, and certainly North Africa, Yemen, Pakistan, Afghanistan, but they really, really want to start a cell in Southeast Asia. They've been looking for over a year at trying to start something in Indonesia particularly. And there are groups who are there, there are groups who are allied with them, or at least ideologically allied with them, but would like to participate, and some of them claim credit and do things on their own to try to get the ball rolling.
And how do we distinguish between groups that are truly allied and taking orders from ISIS Central, whatever that is, and groups that are just wanting to do wanting to carry out attacks because they admire what ISIS stands for?
Sometimes it's very hard to tell. I think in this case, there's been enough messaging from ISIS's headquarters in Raqqa saying we want to do this, we want to start something in that part of the world. And it's easy to see at least the outlines of a plan, some kind of reaching out to a region and trying to get people to do something locally, just to establish a presence, just to show that they're there. And so this might be what we're looking at in this case.
So just how well organized are they in Southeast Asia? What does it look like?
This is new because ISIS hasn't really done anything there before. But they do have at least 600 Southeast Asians in Syria that we know of. Lots of people have come to that region to train. Lots of them have come back to the region to start things. There are lots of other alliances they could make with local groups, ones that have done attacks in the 2000s, some really horrific ones, as we've seen. So this is potentially the start of something new and dangerous.
So they go to Syria to train, and most of them don't stay. They stay long enough to learn whatever tactics they need, and then they're going back? I mean, has that been documented?
It has been documented. It's kind of one leverage point that local governments have, that they try to stop these people as they come back. It's not always possible. These borders are sometimes more porous than we like to think, and sometimes international travel can be more porous with fake passports and visas and this sort of thing. But this is really something that people in the region are very concerned about, and they're starting to see evidence that it's happening.
We pointed out that Indonesia has the largest Muslim population in the world in any single country. Should we be surprised that there haven't been more ISIS recruits from there?
Yeah, you would think so. There's 210 million Muslims in Indonesia. Only about 500, experts say, have gone to Syria to join the fight. That's perhaps partly a reflection of the fact that it's far, it's distant, but it's also the fact that the brand of Islam in Indonesia tends to be more moderate. So you don't see as many radicals, but there are some, and the ones that are there are willing to do very brutal things.
And you were telling us that ISIS has had a pretty sophisticated effort to recruit, that they're using social media and so forth, which we're seeing them use around the world.
Yeah, but the wrinkle on it is they use local people to appeal to people in their homelands, using local tongue, using Malay, using the common language, and also appealing to sort of national pride and to Islamic pride. You know, come represent the cause in Syria or fight for us in other parts of the world. So this is really the ISIS model these days.
And authorities are on top of this? I mean, if the media is aware of it, we have to assume authorities are?
Absolutely worried about it. They're tracking it very closely. It looks like the Indonesian police or the government there has been very aggressive in trying to find these people and root them out. It's not always possible to get all of them because they're pretty good at keeping a low profile.
Joe B. Warwick of the Washington Post, we thank you.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.